All right, everyone, welcome back to the Fundamentally Sound Podcast. This is episode 43, I believe it is. And I'm your host, as always, Reeves Russell Sports. And I am joined by someone I can definitely say is one of the two best Roberts that cover college basketball, my man Rob Doster from NBC Sports. College Basketball Talk. Rob, what's going on, man?
Reeves, how are you, brother?
Good, man. So it's holiday season, right? Christmas. We all make Christmas lists. Well, you have a little one. What's the big kid Christmas gift this day?
That I'm getting?
Like what are kids asking for these days?
Oh, I have absolutely no idea. I have a 2-year-old, and I got him. He's outside the door, so I got him some toy dinosaurs. I got him a Trolls coloring book. Don't tell him, though. He's going to think that came from Santa. Can't spoil that surprise.
So he's still into just like whatever toy he gets, he's thrilled.
Yeah, but like if it's dinosaurs, he's all about dinosaurs. Big dinosaur guy. He's an Elmo guy too. Big Elmo guy too.
What was your Christmas gift that stood out when you were a kid? Like the one thing that you remember. Like, what was your favorite Christmas gift?
My favorite Christmas gift. I don't know, man. I used to always like get fired up when my dad would always like. I was one of like the new video games, whether it was like a new Madden or a new RBI baseball or something like that, or like GoldenEye. And my dad would always be like, "No, we can't get it, man. Like we're not getting that. We can't get that for you." And then like I'd open it up on Christmas, and then like boom, there's the new Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
Or like there's GoldenEye, or there's like the Rumble Pack for the controllers. The Remember those things?
Oh God, yeah. I still have all my N64 games right here in my basement.
Yeah, I have them somewhere in my basement too, man. I haven't fired it up in a while, so I doubt it still works. But yeah, that was I used to love opening those up because my dad every year he would do it too. He's like, "No, we
just
can't
get
it."
Just got you every time.
We can't afford it, and like me, just dumbass like I am, fell for it every single year.
Like every year, like the 21st of December, you had it in your head, like I'm not getting this.
Man, this sucks. I just want to play GoldenEye. All my friends have GoldenEye. I just want to play GoldenEye.
I'm so bad at GoldenEye. I killed myself all the time in that game. I was so bad at it.
How could you be bad at GoldenEye?
I don't know, man. I'm so bad at it. Like, just give me Mario Kart. Give me Mario Golf. Mario Party. Madden. Like, I was – just give me those games. Fox Sports, College Hoops back in the day. That was – like, just give me that. I was good at those games. GoldenEye, I killed myself.
You never wanted to see me in Mario Kart, man.
Oh, I don't know, man. Who's your player?
I used to always go with Koopa Troopa. Okay. That was my favorite guy. But, like, I got too good with him where, like, I used to not play with him. Like, I had to go with somebody else.
Right.
Like, Yoshi.
I was a Yoshi guy. I was Yoshi.
But, see, like, we always banned Yoshi.
Okay.
Because Yoshi was, like, he was too good, right?
Yeah, I guess. Like, we banned Mario just because no one ever wanted to be Mario.
Yeah, Mario, he was kind of lame. We never ended up being Mario. The worst guy was Luigi.
Yo, for sure. For sure.
Because if you're going to be Luigi, you might as well be Mario. Because why would you want to be Luigi?
And then you're trying to say, I'm not being lame.
Yeah, but then, if you're going to be Luigi, like, you might as well just be Bowser. Because people bounce off him better than they bounce off Luigi.
Yeah, and so, the sneaky right pick was always just being Peach.
Yeah, Princess, she used to sneak up on people, man. Yeah. You didn't expect it, but she had some quicks.
Because she was a mix of, like, Koopa Troopa and Yoshi.
Could you, in the Wario's Palace, were you ever able to, like, perfect the shortcut?
I hit it. There was a stretch where I could. Like, if I played now, I couldn't. But there was a stretch where I could get it every time.
Yeah, that was a tough one. Most of the shortcuts I was able to get, the Rainbow Road one was really difficult.
Yeah,
because you had to, like, angle it just right.
Yeah.
But, like, the Wario one, I always had trouble with the Wario one because it was just, you had to get the angle right, you had to get the turn right, you had to get the speed right. That one was tough for me. I struggled with the Wario shortcuts.
So obviously we're talking holiday wish list, Christmas list. It's what we're going to go over today. And ironically enough, I texted you about this earlier in the week, and your response was, "I'm writing a blog on this, so this works perfectly." And you had three pieces go up, what, the last 3 days, right? Today was the last day of it?
Yeah, we had 45 teams go up.
So we're going to focus on different teams, different conferences, and what – they want to ask for. And this isn't going to be like, this is going to be realistic responses, not the fake trades that you used to read back in the day where it's like Ben Simmons goes to Villanova for, you know, Ryan Archidiakono or whatever it was. So we'll start with Villanova because I think everyone agrees they're probably the number one team in the country right now. What would you have for them as their must have on their Christmas list here?
I mean, honestly, I think it's just as simple as health.
I had health too, but I had a very specific one, and I had health for Phil Booth.
See, I think the way the Villanova is set up right now, they are the perfect basketball team for what they want to do. I don't think that they're beyond just like getting Eric Pascal to actually make a three
yeah.
or, you know, making Amari Spellman just better, like a better version of Amari Spellman. Or, you know, some, or making Phil Booth more beyond like making the players they have in their roles just better basketball players than they are right now. I don't really see what you can do. There's no piece that they're missing.
Right, like
they're
they have the least amount of weaknesses of any team in the country. Correct.
Yeah, they have no weaknesses. They're complete. They're the perfect team for what Jay Wright wants to do, and they just so happen to have a top 10 pick in Mikal Bridges, a first-team All-American in Jalen Brunson, and a couple more potential pros on their roster.
Yeah,
that team is very – to me, I love Michigan State, but to me, like, Villanova is clearly the best team in college basketball. The only issue that I see with them is that they don't necessarily have, like, all that much depth. They have, like, maybe seven guys that
they
want to trust.
Well, especially with Gillespie getting hurt now, and who knows how long he's going to be out for, right? Like, you're down to now, what was an eight-man rotation? You're down to now six, seven guys, depending how much you play Cosby Roundtree.
Yeah, and you know, I don't think that, honestly, in college basketball, you really only need seven guys. But the issue is like, if someone, let's say Mikal Bridges gets a high ankle sprain, you know, that could suddenly become a thing where, you know, you don't have as much depth as they have. So really all they need, nobody sprain an ankle. Don't get a high ankle sprain. Stay healthy throughout the year. Don't tweak your knee.
Don't step on your feet.
Don't get a hernia. Just stay healthy.
How many pros do you think they have? Because I know you mentioned, obviously, Bridges. How many do you think they ultimately have from this roster?
Well, obviously Bridges, I think, is a pro. I think Jalen Brunson is in the NBA the same way that like Fred VanVleet and TJ McConnell and guys like that. He's. I remember I talked with one scout from an Eastern Conference team, and he basically said Jalen Brunson is the highest IQ player I've ever scouted.
I mean, that's not a surprise. I mean, you people that like, not to say, not to sound weird about it, but people who really know the game when they watch, like, that's everyone's takeaway, right? That truly know the game. It's just Brunson's the smartest player on the court every time he's on the court.
Yeah, I think DiVincenzo has a shot to play in the NBA.
I'm so high on DiVincenzo. Like, the dumbest thing I ever did probably was put him in my top 50 in my preseason players and left out Mikal Bridges.
Yeah, we had Mikal Bridges too low too. But I, honestly, I thought that he was – I just thought that he was never going to make the leap. Because what he's doing now, I thought he was going to do last year. And then it never came last year. So I was like, all right, maybe he just isn't the guy I thought he was. And that was dumb because he definitely is the guy that I thought he was. And you're seeing it right now. So, but yeah, in terms of pros, so those three, I think Mikal Bridges becomes a good NBA player. I think Jalen Brunson and Dante DiVincenzo spend time on NBA rosters for various amounts of time. I think that Jalen Brunson probably has a career in the NBA, while Dante DiVincenzo has a cup of coffee in the NBA. And then Eric Pascal, if he can ever become a consistent three-point shooter, I think has a chance to hang around and play a role for somebody. I think Jermaine Samuels is that same kind of boat where he has the body and the tools.
I debated putting him as my answer for their list, their wish on their Christmas list here. Because if he can develop it, like they just haven't been able to play him. Because he's been lost when he's been out there.
He's also surplus.
Yeah,
because he's not as good as Eric Pascal and what Eric Pascal does. He's not as good as Mikal Bridges. He's not as good as Dante DiVincenzo, and he's a different player than Phil Booth. So I think he's surplus.
Right.
And
but
what's great about Villanova is you let him sit on the bench for a year, 2 years, and all of a sudden they go from being Jermaine Samuels and then they turn into Mikal Bridges.
Yep. Yeah, that's very true. It's very true. So we'll move on to Nova. We'll stay in the Big East with a team that – how high were you on Xavier in the preseason?
Pretty high.
Okay, so we're both high on them
top 10 to 15
from the
team.
Get-go. Yeah. All right, so we're both high on them from the preseason. I think they're the fifth best team in the country right now.
Ooh.
Yeah, I've been having them number five.
That's high.
I know. But at full health, like, when they get going, so, but my list for them, or what they would have as their top gift here would be one of those point guards to start shooting the ball, or one of the guards, because Gates, Mikura, and Blewett are all shooting like plus 40% from the 3-point line, I believe, while Scruggs, Marshall, and Gooden are shooting like 17.5% combined.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I just went with, I think they need a third guy to step up and kind of be a scorer. Right now, I don't really know who that is.
Right.
You know, if you have someone that can shut down Trevon Blewett, and there's not very many people that can. Trevon Blewett is fantastic, right? But if you have a guy that can kind of slow him down and give him a little bit of trouble, maybe like a Mikal Bridges, you know, or a Kyrie Thomas at Creighton, I think those guys can give him some trouble. And then you have to rely on J.P. Mikura, who, like, I love him as a player.
He's streaky.
He can also be streaky. Yeah. He can be inconsistent. So if there's a night where Trevon Blewett is having someone give him some trouble, and J.P. Mikura is having one of his off nights, who do you trust to go get you a bucket?
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. Like, I wish if Gooden could develop a jumper, a consistent jumper, I think that team vaults to, you know, in that tier with what I think people consider the top three of Duke, Michigan State, Nova.
I don't think that they're quite good enough on the defensive end for me. Like, I wish that they were. They don't really like have any playmakers defensively. Does that make sense?
I think Gooden is to a degree. I think Marshall and Scruggs can be, but you know, you're asking freshmen to go do it.
Yeah, I guess.
Like Blewett's not doing it. Mikura's not doing it. I mean, Mikura will try to jump every pass, but that doesn't necessarily mean what we're talking about, right? Like,
yeah,
he'll try to jump everything and get steals that way.
Yeah, and here's my thing with Xavier. I guess the overarching point is that I don't know if there is anybody that I would trust in a big game more than Trevon Blewett. And I don't know if there's five coaches in the country I would want coaching my team in the NCAA tournament more than Chris Mack.
No.
And you put those two things together, and I think that this is like a Final Four team, and I think an illegitimate Final Four threat. And I don't think that I would call them, you know, a top. I don't think they're top five. I think they're in that probably that 10 to 15-ish kind of range, somewhere around there. I think I have them probably, I want to say ninth. And that might be a little bit high, but I don't know if it makes sense to people listening how I can reconcile saying that I think this team is a legitimate Final Four threat, and I think that they're probably like a 10, 9, 10, 11, 12 best team in the country.
Well,
but it makes sense in my mind.
I think you're talking about two different animals, though, right? Like, the NCAA tournament is completely different than how you rank teams. Like, you're not putting the best four teams in the Final Four. Like, it's like you mentioned, it's coaching that two-game tournaments, essentially, to get to the next round or to get to the next weekend.
Yep.
And it's all about matchups. NCAA tournament's all about matchups. Then you mentioned how many people can guard Trevon Blewett. Like, you're not seeing Mikal Bridges and you're not seeing Kyrie Thomas until at least the Sweet 16.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
so
two guys in your conference. I don't know many others that can guard him.
Yeah, and you know, that's a good point, but it's still I guess when I rank teams, I rank, if you rely as much as I think that Xavier relies on Trevon Blewett, I just rank them a little bit lower to my mind. But I think we're splitting nits here.
So we'll move on to the ACC.
Picking nits, splitting. What the hell is splitting nits?
To say splitting hairs.
You're an idiot. Splitting hairs. There you go. Splitting nits. Yes. That was like the other day. I had Jeff Borzello on my podcast.
I listened to that. That was great.
And I said, I said, all ships rise with the tide.
Yeah, you guys had a solid like 30 seconds trying to figure out what it was.
And it's a rising tide lifts all ships, right?
I never heard that before. I've never heard
all
that.
All ships rise with the tide. Rising tide lifts all ships. It's one of those two. I can never remember.
I've never heard that saying though. Either way, however you phrase it, I've never heard it.
However we're phrasing it, we're splitting it.
Yeah. So we'll move on to the ACC and everyone's favorite team, Duke, which You could go a lot of different ways here. I'm gonna go with that Trayvon Duvall developing a jumper, similar to what we just said with Xavier. I think I read yours, and I think yours is different.
Yeah. The ability to defend a ball screen.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's very true. How much is that defensive scheme versus the roster they're rolling out?
I mean, I think it has a lot to do with both. Okay. You know, to be honest, like, I just don't think that Wendell Carter and Marvin Bagley are ever going to be great defenders when you try to kind of put them in that situation. Like, that's just not who they are. But I do think Marvin Bagley should be better than he has been. Because, I mean, I have issues with him as a prospect. I don't think I'm quite as high on him as some other people are, because I'm concerned about the fact that he doesn't do one of two things. He doesn't make threes, and he doesn't block shots. And I believe it was Jonathan Jarks, who does a bunch of NBA draft stuff, a smart guy at The Ringer, and he made this point that there's only one player in the NBA right now that averages more than 15 points and averages less than one blocked shot and one three-pointer made. Do you know who it is?
Over 15, less than one. Cousins?
No. Less than 1 3 and less than one blocked shot.
I have no idea.
He's a rookie.
Oh.
He's a point guard.
Ball.
No. Over 6'10".
Oh, Simmons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ben Simmons is the only guy in the NBA that averages more than 15 points and less than 1 3 and less than one block shot. And right now, Marvin Bagley is averaging less than 1 3-pointer a game. I think he's shooting like 23% from three or something like that. And he's averaging less than one block shot. That's a concern to me as a prospect moving forward.
Where would you have him as like the prospect rankings? Like if you're just putting together a big board for NBA prospects, take Doncic out of it. We'll just talk college guys.
Yeah, I probably would have him behind DeAndre Ayton and behind Michael Porter Jr. But it's tough, man, because like you kind of – I think the doctors have to make the pick for you for Michael
Porter
Jr.
Porter, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, let them decide what's going on with his back. Like if my doctors give him the clean bill of health and I'm an NBA GM, then I'm taking him over Bagley. If they look at it and say, you know what, I'm worried about this thing. It could be degenerative. I think, you know, in 4 years down the road, he might need another surgery kind of deal. I think I would take Bagley over him. But the X factor and all that, dude, like, at what point do we start saying Trae Young has to be in the conversation with these guys?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of, like, NBA prospect, though, like, he is 6'2". Like, he's a legit 6'2", but he's small. He's small 6'2".
Yeah, but here's the thing.
I guess that's not a knock anymore, though, right? Like, the way the league's going, like...
He's basically the same size as Steph Curry.
Right, like,
he's 6'2", 180. Steph Curry is 6'3", 190.
Yeah, yeah.
And Trae Young is 19. He hasn't even had a full year in Oklahoma's like strength and training and strength and conditioning program.
He's going to get up to 190 at some point.
He's going to put on weight, and he's going to get a little bit more athletic and a little bit more quick.
I think he's going to be.
I would take him before Colin Sexton.
You take him over Sexton?
Because here's my thing, right? So I've gone back and forth on this, and I've had conversations with people about this. On my podcast, I actually just spent 15 minutes talking with Fran Fraschilla about it. I talked with our buddy Sam Buscemi about it. I talked with Jeff Borzello about it. I talked with some scouts about it. And this is kind of where I'm landing on it. What he does in college is exactly what the best point guards in the NBA do. They basically put three shooters around the floor, right? And they set a high ball screen for Trae Young, and they say, go make a play. That's basically what the Oklahoma offense is.
Yep.
Now, that's what they do. Like, it's not so much what they do at Golden State with Steph Curry just because they have so many talented guys. But you can do that with Steph Curry if you wanted to at Golden State. And there are times where they do just kind of do that, right? That's kind of what they do with James Harden at Houston. It's what they would love to do with Russell Westbrook at Oklahoma City if they actually had three guys they could put on the floor that could shoot at the same time, right? So
if Andre Roberson wasn't there.
Yeah, if Andre Roberson wasn't there, or if Steven Adams was able to knock down a three, they could just Roberson in those ball screens. But so that's kind of what, like, Trae Young – that every NBA team runs their offense that way at this point, right?
I get it, but I still think the fact that
– ball screens. Like,
there's still just something about Sexton for me, man.
I mean, he's a phenomenal scorer. Like, don't get me wrong. I'd love Colin Sexton, and I don't want this to come off as me hating on Colin Sexton.
Oh, right. No, I mean, you have to hate somebody if you rank someone, one person over them.
Yeah, I know, right? I only think he's the second best point guard in the 2018 NBA draft. He must be terrible, says Rob Doster.
Yep, and I hate Trae Young because I still lean Colin Sexton over Trae Young.
Yeah, I guess my big thing is that I think I'm not 100% sold on this, but this is the way that I'm leaning, is that I think that you can let Trae Young be the engine of an NBA offense and have that NBA offense be good. Because I think that he's going to make the players around him better. And when you put better players around him, he's going to be more effective. Like, Fran was making this point, is that he's such good. Like, people don't understand this, right? And maybe they do now because of the 22 assists. But it's not the three-point shooting that makes him special. It's not his ability. It's not his ability to split ball screens. It's his ability to understand where everybody else is on the floor. Like, I did something on this. I wrote about this on Tuesday. Literally the day that he had 22 assists, I wrote about how good he is as a passer. His ability to understand where the help side is, like when he's in ball screens. Does the weak side wing come over and help into the lane? And does he have that pass? Is does the role man follow him all the way down when he's getting when he's getting double teamed off the screen? And so he has the little dump off, wraparound dump off. Does he have the guy in the weak side corner? Does he have a guy in the strong side corner? Does the pick and pop man stay with him so he has the popper? Like, his ability to understand where players are in those offenses, that's not going away. That's something that he always has. That's what you need to be able to thrive in the NBA at the point guard spot. And he has that. He has all of that already. Like, there are players that get drafted in the first round where you're like, I think that he could end up being a good player, but we have to teach him how to operate in pick and rolls. You don't have to do that with Trae Young. So I think when you put all that together, his understanding of the game, the way that he can score, the way that he can pass, the way that he already has – the other part about it, he might be short. He's already got the float game. Like, you don't have to worry about anything around the paint. I understand he's not super explosive, but he's a little bit like Steph Curry, where he already has the float game with both hands and he gets laid off the glass. And, you know, he doesn't need to have that extra level of explosiveness at the rim to be effective.
You know where he'd be really fun? I'm looking at the NBA standings right now and just kind of seeing who would be in, like, pick 7 to 10 range, because that's probably where Young would go, right? Assuming.
I don't even know if he would go that last that long. I legitimately think that he's going to end up being a top 5 pick.
So if he's a top 5 pick, man, like Memphis would be a lot of fun with him if they keep Mark, because you can play him off the bench with Conley. But Charlotte, they're number 7 right now. Charlotte would be a lot of fun with Trae Young.
Yeah, but that's my guy Kemba, man.
I know, but if you bring Trae Young off the bench, like I like that. I like that there, because it's the teams right now. You have the Hawks, the Mavs, the Grizzlies, the Bulls, the Suns, the Magic, the Hornets, the Kings, and then the Nets, which are essentially the Cavs, the Lakers, and the Clippers. Those are your lottery-type picks right now.
No, I would love if he ended up on the Cavs, assuming LeBron stays.
If LeBron stays, and that's a perfect fit, because he gets to learn from Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Like that'd be a lot of fun. So we'll move on from them and go with a team that I don't. Are you still? I want to see if you're still down on this team. You were down on this team, and that's Virginia.
Ooh. Am I down on them still?
Because they were down Purdue. Like me and you. I think we were texting about it when you're making fun of me and Purdue. But you said I was like this with Virginia for a while.
Yeah. What are they, like, third on KenPom right now, fourth? I don't think that they're that good.
They're perpetually top three.
Yeah, I don't think that they're a top five team. I don't know that I would call them a top 10 team. But they're certainly, like, in the mix for top 15 for me. And I think I have them, like, 16th or 17th. The big thing is, so what I would what I think they need is somebody that can put the ball on the floor and create.
Yep.
I have it specifically, I have it as a slasher. But the thing that made them great when they had Malcolm Brogdon was it was basically the same thing that they have right now, the same kind of setup where they would use Brogdon in the role where they would run him off of the screens the same way that they're doing with Kyle Guy right now. Like, that's what their isolation is. They don't at the end of the shot clock, they don't put somebody in a high ball screen. They don't put someone in isolation. They don't give someone a post up from 15 feet. What they do is they run somebody off two or three screens and try to get him either off, like Brogdon off a curl, Kyle Guy off a curl, Kyle Guy sprinting into a three-pointer on the wing. And Kyle Guy can do that, but the difference between him and Brogdon is that Brogdon was able to put the ball on the floor and get to the rim, or put the ball on the floor, draw a defender, and find someone for a pass. Kyle Guy is kind of limited to being like a catch-and-shoot player at this point. And I think that he can eventually get there. I don't want to put it past him. Like, I love the way that he plays and kind of how he's developed. But I don't think that he is a guy. Like, when push comes to shove, like they're kind of a little bit over-reliant on the jump shot for me, especially in a situation like that. And I want to see, and I wish they had another guy that could slash and get to the rim.
Yeah, so I had consistency from Ty Jerome, because he's just been still this up and down guy like he was as a freshman. But going to what you were saying, like Virginia's best teams, they had Brogdon, they had Justin Anderson, they had Joe Harris, they had that guy that could just go get a bucket, right? Like they had a guy that they could rely on. And that was my question about them coming into this year, and it's still holding true. Like, yes, Kyle Guy he can go for 20, but how confident are you with, like you mentioned, 7 seconds left on the clock and the ball's in his hand?
Yeah, so the X factor for me is Devin Hall. He's been really good throughout the year. I'm curious to see what happens as the competition that they play gets a little bit more difficult, right? Like he was, what did he have, like 19-6 against West Virginia? So yeah, if he can consistently be that guy, I that might actually be the answer to the question that I have. So it'll be interesting to see how he develops. I still want to see it from him on a more consistent basis, but I think that that might actually be the guy. And if that is the guy, then I think that we can start talking about Virginia maybe creeping up into that conversation with Duke, Miami, and, well, like until Wednesday, North Carolina at the top of the ACC.
Yeah, and that's where we'll go next is North Carolina. We talked about it a little bit on your podcast with them, but I still think I think we both agree it has to be some sort of development or growth with the young post players.
Yeah, like literally what mine was one of those three big men to fast forward to their senior year.
Right. Like, I'm still not completely buying Luke May of what Luke May has been to start the year. Like, I don't think he's an All-American. I don't think he's,
Wait, you don't think...
No, I don't think he'll...
He is an All-American, or you don't think that he's played like an All-American?
No, I think he's played like an All-American. I don't think he... I think you said this with Sam or Goodman, one of the two on your podcast, where you said if the season ended now, he has to be on one of the three teams.
Yes,
which I agree with. I don't think that's who he is, though, like throughout the course of the season.
Yeah, I can see that. And I do think that he's going to come back to earth a little bit, the same way that I think that like Trae Young is going to come back to earth a little bit. Like, there's no way Trae Young is going to average 28-10 throughout the year.
No.
It's not going to happen. So I do think that Luke May is going to come back to earth a little bit. But I wouldn't be surprised to see him average, like, he's averaging, what, like 20-10 now? I wouldn't be surprised to see Luke May average 17-9 in ACC play. I think that's realistic.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I'm curious to see kind of how the offense flows now that Cam Johnson's back. I think he takes a little bit away from what May does of stretching the floor and getting some open shots. I think Johnson will kind of just, by numbers, take shots away.
Yeah, and the other concern is, like, them defensively. Against Wofford, they were really, really bad defensively with that lineup.
That offense,
and they weren't good enough offensively to make up for it. And maybe that was because Cam Johnson was rusty. Like, he did just come off of a surgically repaired knee that he had, a surgically repaired meniscus?
I believe so.
So, yeah, I mean, it could just be rust, but it was a little bit concerning how not awesome they were on the offensive end with that lineup. The lineup that's Joel Berry, Kenny Williams, Theo Pinson, Cam Johnson, and Luke May was the one that I was like dreaming of seeing North Carolina play, and then they played it and it wasn't that good, and I was kind of like, son of a bitch.
That offense should be a lot of fun. Like, that should be a great offensive lineup.
Yeah, in theory, all of this stuff in theory should be great.
So I'm going to move to a conference that I'm completely down on, and I think everyone in the country is completely down on. What does the Big Ten asking for as a whole as a conference.
Oh, man. Can they add UConn instead of Rutgers?
Why? Rutgers is good. Steve Pikel, man.
You know what? Rutgers is better than UConn right now. So
With a UConn guy.
Oh, man. What does the Big Ten need? They need Northwestern to win at Oklahoma. They need a couple more like non-conference wins to kind of boost everything within the league, and you know, Minnesota to figure their stuff out. God, Minnesota, that one's frustrating me because I thought I was in on them.
Yeah, and I'm like
I love the guards entering the season.
Yep, Nate Mason
falling off a cliff.
Yep,
and I didn't know what to expect of their big guys. Reggie Lynch is leading the nation in block shots. Jordan Murphy is leading the nation in rebounds, and he's averaging 20 points a game. So that team went from being a team where I didn't know what was going to happen in their front court with great guards to being a team that has a great front court and those same great guards, and they can't win a damn game.
No. And as we're talking, they're up only up 12 against Oral Roberts.
Come on, Richard.
So
killing me.
How about this?
I went through and I reported out a whole story on Jordan Murphy, just hoping, like, when they were awesome, right? I went up to the game and Barclays, and I got him and Richard on the phone. I talked to his AU coach, and the story's going to end up being pretty good, but, like, I have to wait for them to stop being horrible to write it. Because what else? Like, oh, yeah, Minnesota's got this guy, but, you know, they look like they might end up being the NIT. Yeah,
like, or they're a 7 seed.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, thanks a lot, guys. Come on, Richard. You're killing me here.
So I'm going even more deeper than what you have. The conference needs a national championship.
Yeah,
like,
bad.
They have, yeah, like everyone, and I say this every single year when the storylines start up of you can't win, like freshman teams have won, what, 2 national championships since 2000 or whatever. And my response is always, well, why would you ever pick a Big Ten team when they haven't won since 2000?
Like, yeah.
They desperately need Michigan State to win another national title.
I think Michigan State does it.
I mean, I'm still sticking with my preseason pick of Nova.
You had Nova preseason?
That was really good now. I had Nova preseason, and I had Jalen Brunson preseason and National Player of the Year.
Well, hey, Jalen Brunson isn't even Villanova Player of the Year.
Yeah, I mean,
that's a good question. Who is Brunson. If you had to pick, you take Brunson over Bridges?
In a heartbeat. I think Brunson allows Bridges to be what Bridges is, not vice versa.
Yeah, that makes sense.
A little bit of like last year during Big East play, like Jalen Brunson was better than Josh Hart in the Big East last year, but that was more because Josh Hart was like allowing Jalen Brunson to be better than him last year. I think it's kind of comparable to that.
Yeah, I guess. I go back and forth on it.
Stats are ridiculous.
Yeah, and I honestly I go back and forth on it. And really, I think what it comes down to is whoever played like the best in the last game that I watched is who I got. So I was literally sitting courtside when Mikal Bridges went for 28-6 at the Jimmy V Classic against Gonzaga.
He was like the number one pick of, like, everyone was just writing him in right then and there, top 5.
Yeah, and then I was sitting around with my son watching the Villanova-Temple game, and I was like, oh, my God, Jalen Brunson, a monster.
20 points in the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, oh, he's definitely their best player. So it's all going to depend on who had the best game the last time I watched him play.
I still think Brunson can do a little bit more, especially on the offensive side where, you know, when the ball is in his hands, he's going to beat you. Like, I still question how much Mikal Bridges truly can create for his own off the bounce.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair question if you're asking about him at the next level. But
he doesn't have to. Like Klay Thompson doesn't have to. Now, that's a little different because he has everyone in the world around him. But
you just called Mikal Bridges Klay Thompson.
No, I'm not saying that.
Yes, you did. You can't take it back now. That was your comp. Can't take it back.
Let's go, Mikal. I'm banking on you, man. You mentioned Michigan State. Let's go to them because I think there's one glaring thing that they need asking for.
Well, what do you have? Because I'm a little torn on what I think it could end up being.
They need just one person on that roster who can take care of the ball.
Yeah.
Because they have zero. Like, everyone on that roster is turnover prone.
Yeah, they are. And I think that's kind of fair, but I think that it's also like what I would say is just like Cassius Winston to take care of the ball.
Yeah, I mean,
because that's really what it is.
But it's even like the bigs though, like Jaren Jackson, like turnover rates. Jaren Jackson, 24%. Miles Bridges is the lowest on the team at 14.5%.
But see, like I'm not when it comes to turnover rates, I'm not super concerned about it when we're talking about Jaren Jackson or we're talking about sure. Josh Langford or we're talking about Bridges or just, Bridges a little bit more.
They just make bad decisions.
Yeah, and Cassius Winston is a little bit too sloppy with it.
Yeah, but he makes up for it.
Well, you know what? Maybe sloppy is the wrong word.
He's advantageous.
He tries to do a little bit too much. I would also love for Tum Tum Nairn to be a little bit more of an offensive option.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do kind of like the combination of like where you can throw him and Cassius out there together for a couple minutes at a time. I would love to see them be more consistent, I guess, shooting the three. You know, I'm not convinced that Miles Bridges is always going to be a great three. It's just the way that he shoots, the way that Jaren Jackson shoots, I think it's just like since their forms are just so ugly that I can't really wrap my head around the fact that the shots go in. But
yeah, I mean, but if Cassius Winston's shooting 55%, you're fine. I think you're fine.
Yeah, it just it kind of their bigs are just so dominant inside that I think they have to be able to knock down threes to be able to just so defenses if they do collapse get punished and if they don't collapse or I guess have a reason to not collapse is probably the better way to phrase it.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you there. We'll stick one more team in the Big Ten. We'll go Purdue.
Hold on, I forgot what I wrote for him. Let me look it up real quick. all right, so what we wrote was Michigan State to tank.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. It's because they only get them once.
Yeah, they only get them once, and Michigan State is definitely a better team. What I would probably say is for Isaac Haas to find a way to be a little bit quicker.
Yeah, yep.
Because he is – what he provides them from the post offensively, I think, is something that is so they have a little bit of the same issue that I have with Kentucky. And hear me out when I say this. I think that with Kentucky, the biggest problem with that team is their best offensive point guard is Kaquade Green, and their best defensive point guard is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And the problem is, on the other end of the floor, Kaquade is such a nothing defensively, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is such a nothing offensively that it creates this issue where it's like, okay, either we're going to have our offensive team out there or our defensive team out there, but there's no kind of like in between, and you can't really have an in between since both those guys really only are like great on one end of the floor. Does that make sense?
Yep. Nope. Completely.
And so with Purdue, I think that you're kind of seeing a little bit of that issue with Isaac Haas and Matt Harms, where Isaac Haas is so good and so dominant when he wants to be on the offensive end of the floor. But I mean, when you're 7'3" and 290 pounds, like you're never going to be moving quickly anywhere. So like, it's understandable that he's not a great defensive player, but he's not a great defensive player. Right. Whereas Matt Harms actually does have a little bit of that in him. I need to watch more before I kind of like set in my heels with a take on whether or not like he's a really, really good defender or he's just like played well so far. But I do think that he's a little bit better. And that's a little bit of a concern to me because it means, and I guess like the bigger picture is when teams, their best offensive team isn't their best defensive team, that is kind of a little bit of a red flag. When their best offensive five is the same as their best defensive five, I think that those are the kind of teams that can make runs in March and that you pick to be like national title teams. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because, I mean, we've seen it. Like, Painter doesn't trust Haas defensively. They go offense-defense, like, 4 minutes left in the game.
Yeah.
Like, they start subbing pretty
late. They kind of have
early.
To. Yeah, they kind of have to because that's just, like, it's a situation that you kind of get yourself in when you have a guy that it just – like, Isaac – let's put it like this. Isaac Haas, like, it's really difficult to imagine a guy when you're 7'3" and 290 to be mobile enough to be an athlete at this level, a Big Ten – I almost said a professional athlete, but to be – I think he will probably play in the NBA. But to be a Big Ten caliber athlete like he is. So the idea that he's actually skilled enough and coordinated enough to do what he does is pretty impressive. But it's also like a big ask to ask somebody with like just that much size to move quickly enough to be a good defender. It's kind of it's hard. It's a tough ask. There's a reason that you don't see many 7-footers out guarding on the perimeter, and why they're such unicorns when you run up when you find a guy like a like a Kristaps Porzingis or someone like that.
Right, and everyone literally calls him a unicorn.
Yeah, that's his nickname, the unicorn, because or like a Giannis, a Antetokounmpo.
Yep,
a freak. Did I get that right?
Yeah.
There's a reason that they have nicknames like unicorn and freak.
Right. We'll get out of the Big Ten and head to the Big 12, and we're not going to talk about Kansas because everyone knows the answer to Kansas, and that is some sort of big body and or toughness. Right.
Well, there's two things. One, they need toughness, and two, I don't. Silvio D'Souza is a band-aid to me. The real problem with Kansas is they need Preston. They need somebody else that can create offense that isn't Devontae Graham.
I completely
agree. I've talked about this on two different podcasts of my own. I'm pretty sure that we talked about this on one of your podcasts. Like it's we don't need to go over it, but they need Billy Preston if they are going to be a national title contender in my mind.
So we'll move on from them. What about West Virginia, who many people are starting to think, hey, this is the year West Virginia beats Kansas for the Big 12 title?
I honestly kind of think it's as simple as saying they need those young guys to keep playing like they're old guys.
Yeah, that makes sense.
They have let's count it up. Count this up. They have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 sophomores on the roster, and they have, it looks like, so just one freshman. So they have 8 freshmen and sophomores on their roster that are playing minutes. And I think part of the reason that we've seen a slow start from them, the reason they kind of got smacked around by Texas A&M early in the season, and the reason they had to, you know, come back from 17 down against Missouri, and why they haven't been as good as we expect the Bobby Huggins team to be early on in the year, was because they had all those young pieces. You know, the thing about West Virginia, the reason that I had them as a top 10 team in the preseason was because I thought that they've lost program guys like each of the last 2 or 3 years, like important pieces, Nathan Adrian, you know, Elijah Macon, guys that play important roles for them that may not show up in the box score necessarily. They lost important program guys. And when you lose players like that, it's not just the leadership. It's not just the understanding of what you want to do on offensively and not defensively. It's not just like the fact that you're 22 instead of 19 or 20 playing in there. So losing that was hard for them to overcome early in the year. And I think that we're kind of seeing some of those freshmen and sophomores grow into it a little bit. But I'm not 100% convinced that they are there yet.
Right.
So if you could just have those guys like play like they're older, because I mean the grind's coming, man. The Big 12 is going to be a monster this year.
Yeah, they're loaded. I mean the Big 12's loaded.
How about this? After they play Fordham on Saturday, West Virginia will only play 2 more games against teams that are not top 50 teams on KenPom. Do you know who those are? It's Iowa State away.
Iowa State
at home, yeah. And Iowa State is 71st on KenPom. And they're getting better. Every single team in the Big 12 is ranked in the top 75 on KenPom, and Iowa State is the only team not ranked in the top 50. That conference is a monster.
Who do you think finishes last in the Big 10 when it's all in Big 12 when it's all said and done?
Someone has to finish last. If Andrew Jones doesn't come back, I think that there's an outside shot. It could end up being Texas. I think that Iowa State is probably the safe pick just because they don't really have anything inside, and they're kind of getting by on the fact that they do have some perimeter scores, and teams haven't really figured out what to do with Nick Wheeler-Bab at the point guard yet. I'm still not 100% convinced that what Oklahoma State is doing isn't just kind of like a mirage.
Yeah, that was going to be my pick.
But hey, man, credit to Mike Boynton. He was put into a tough situation, and he's kind of getting the job done. So, how about this? If I were to say that you could either pick someone in the league, you had to pick someone in the league to get 13 wins or get 13 losses, 13 or more. Or you could say that everybody in the conference is going to finish between 12 and 6 and 6 and 12. Which way would you lean?
Everyone will finish between 12 and 6 and 6 and 12.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am too. How about this? You got to bet your life savings on who's going to win the Big 12. Are you taking Kansas or the field?
I will oh God. I mean, I think I want to say Kansas just because how do you not say Kansas? But the field bet's always a smart bet.
Yeah, but I think I would take Kansas.
It has to be, right?
You want to know why I would take Kansas? Because I would make that bet every year for the last 13 years, and I would be up so much money.
Right, right.
That I would have
had an awesome 13-year life.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good one. Same with the ACC, same type of question. Like, how many wins the ACC this year?
Probably 14. I think
I don't know if anyone gets to 14. Bottom.
I think there's enough question marks at the bottom of the conference.
And it's all based, I guess, on the schedules, because that's an unbalanced schedule, and who do you get twice, and who do you get home and away. And the only reason I ask that is someone asked me after Sunday's game if, not counting ACC tournament, postseason tournament, they set the line at North Carolina, and this was pre-Wofford, at 25 regular season wins. And I was like, that's easily the under, because 13 wins in the ACC this year is going to be a lot to ask.
Yeah. What are they at now, 10 and 2?
Yes. And they are at 10 and 2, and they have Ohio State, and then they get into conference play. And they have a weird conference schedule. Like, they have Duke twice. They have Notre Dame twice. They're at Virginia Tech. They're at Virginia. They're at Syracuse. They're at, like, every game that they have on the road is ones that they wish they had at home. The only home game that you're, like, happy about having at home is Miami.
Yeah. I think I would – that's a good line. I think I would probably take the under just because I don't think the over is very likely.
Right. Like, you to get over 25, I guess it should have been 24.5. So over 24.5, to get to 25, you still need – I mean, you're at 10-2. They beat Ohio State 11. Like, you still need 14 wins in conference. Essentially, you have to win the ACC.
Yeah. I mean, that's basically what you're betting, is that they're going to win the ACC, and I don't think they're going to win the ACC.
No. So we'll get out of that, and another just conference question for you. The American Athletic Conference.
What do they need? They need UConn to be UConn, and they need Memphis to be Memphis, and they need Temple to be Temple. And they need – I guess SMU kind of is
SMU. SMU's been fine. Yeah. They've been SMU. I think they need – I had UConn to be relevant, because that's the only way that I think they eventually get looked at as a true major conference. Because, I mean, what do you consider – do you consider college basketball to have a – Power 5, a Power 6, or a Power 7?
I don't think that – I mean, honestly, if I had to pick, it would be Power 7. But I think that you just refer to it as the Power 5 because that's the money that's involved.
I think there's a Major 6 and then the Americans in purgatory.
I don't know. I guess that's assuming that you don't think Memphis and UConn and Temple are going to come back.
Well, until they do. Like, once they – if they can show me that they're back, then I'm
– I guess the question is this. Like, what's the difference between the American and the Pac-12 then?
The Pac-12 at least – I mean, this year the Pac-12 is terrible, which is a little unfair. But
I feel like we say that every year the Pac-12 is terrible. Like, when was the last time Washington State was good? How often has Oregon State been good? Cal's atrocious. There seems like there's always a team that's atrocious.
Cal was just a 4 seed 2 years ago.
Yeah, and then what were they before that? It's because they, like, Quanzo Martin happened to show up and bring Jalen Brown and Ivan Rabb with them.
Yeah, I know, but they're, like, the American, like, how much can you say, like, if Wichita State just didn't show up?
Well, so when Cal was good, Arizona State was terrible.
Right, but I'm trying to look at the Pac-12.
I guess my larger point is that I don't think you can look at the immediate when you talk about whether, like, the Power 5, Power 6, Power 7, whatever it is. You have to look at what you think it is in the long term. And I think in the long term, Memphis and UConn and Temple care too much about their basketball programs to not get back to being good.
I guess, but like I don't know what it's going to take for Memphis to get back.
Truth is, it is going to take a new coach.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, I think that's the answer for a couple of these things.
And that's the truth and the answer for
UConn
as well.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's a weird conference to me because how many true national how good is their good, right? Like Wichita State, I think most people consider a true national title contender.
Oh, man, I don't know. Wichita State, they frustrate me. They can't guard anyone anymore.
I know, yeah, that's true. But with McDuffie back, like, do you think I always question when a team gets a top 2-3 player back. I know it's not gonna solve all the issues, but.
And I think it does. I was talking with Chris Stone of I don't even know where Fansided. He's all over the place. But I was talking with him about it the other day, and he made the point, and I think it's a valid point, that Marcus McDuffie's return gives them their defensive lineup versatility that they've been lacking.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
So he can guard fours, he can guard threes. He lets you play big, he lets you play small. So he's kind of like the piece that brings everything together. And I guess that makes sense, but I'm not convinced that he is the answer that turns them from being who they've been to being a top five team again. And this is coming from a guy that literally wrote a column 1 month ago that said, when can we start talking about Wichita State as being one of the best teams in the country? Or the best team in the country. I've got as much shit for that as I was expecting.
Oh, I'm sure. Who do you have Wichita State or Cincinnati as a better team? As of December 21st, 2017.
Like if they played right now in a neutral?
Yeah, who would you take to win that game?
I think I would take Cincinnati today. I think if you asked me in March, I would take Wichita State.
That makes sense. I'd still probably lean Wichita right now just because I don't trust Cincinnati's point guard situation, and Wichita has a top five point guard in the country. And I think that this match goes a long way. I'm one. I don't know where you put a lot of stock in. I put a lot of stock in teams' point guards.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I try to. I sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes unsuccessful. You put a lot. The guy that puts a lot of stock in teams' point guards has Xavier as a top five team, right?
I know. That's that's me just buying all the stock in Chris Mack.
Yeah, fair enough. And that I guess by picking Greg Marshall, I'm saying I buy all the stock in.
Right.
By picking Wichita State, I'm saying I buy all the stock in Greg Marshall.
So the last team we'll touch on, we'll go to a team who I think most people would probably put in the top five, and that's Texas A&M.
What does Texas A&M need? I forget what I wrote for them. Hold on. Let me dig through.
They're a weird team when you're looking at what do they need.
What we had was Admon Giller to be healthy.
Yeah.
What's he got? He's got a wrist or something?
Something like that. He's out, 3 weeks or something like that? 2 to 3 weeks?
Yeah, I forget exactly what it is. I should probably know that off the top of my head. Let me look it up.
I think it's a left wrist, if I remember correctly.
2 to 3 weeks with a knee injury.
Knee, that's what it is.
Yeah. So he'll be out for the start of SEC play. The big thing, I think, with them is I want to see whether or not Robert Williams ever makes the step that we were hoping that he would make, right?
That's like, what I wrote something similar down regarding that.
We know what he is defensively, and he's been more than what we could have asked for defensively, I think. Like, he's been awesome on that end of the floor. But there are times when things kind of get bogged down for them on the offensive end. And I think, honestly, like at this point, it makes more sense to play Tony Trochimorelos with Tyler Davis than it does to play Robert Williams with Tyler Davis when you need a bucket.
You have two similar players. And that was my kind of answer was, for Billy Kennedy to let Robert Williams cook, right? Like, I don't think he puts him in the best position.
I guess. I also don't know, like, what – how do you do that? Like, if you're going to let him cook, yeah, what do you let him do?
I don't know. That's why I said Billy Kennedy has to do it, not me.
Good point. The other thing, they need DJ Hogue to keep being this guy that he's been and not the guy that he, reverts to as a freshman and sophomore.
Yeah, because he's been, like, he was really good.
There is nobody in college basketball the last 2 years that had a prettier release that was as bad of a shooter as DJ Hogue was. Yeah. And he wasn't bad. Like, I think he shot, 35%, 34% from three last year.
Where, like, he left, like, when it left his hand, you're like, oh, that's in. And it just, like, clanked off the side of the rim.
And every single time he shot it, you were like, yeah, that's good. That's a bucket. That's good. He's got if you were going to show somebody a textbook release, you would show them DJ Hogue's. And so it didn't really make sense why he was missing the way he was missing. I mean, shooting 50% for three this year, like, that's what he should be doing.
Yeah, he should maybe be a 40. He should be a 42% three-point shooter
at minimum. So, yeah, having him keep shooting like that and, like, figuring out just, like, what the hell to do with Robert Williams is the big thing, because it's just so hard to have a talent like that when he doesn't necessarily fit with the other pieces that you have on that roster.
I think they remind me of Michigan State, right? Like, they have – they're super deep at – both in the backcourt and the frontcourt. But in the frontcourt, they both have their best player a little bit out of position. Like, Miles Bridges is best at the four. Like, he fits in best at the four as opposed to the three. And Williams, like, again, you have him and Davis who are similar type players. And they're both, like, both teams are turnover prone. Both teams rank about what, like, the same in turnovers. I think they mimic each other quite a bit, with Michigan State just being a better version.
Yeah, I guess. That's fair. I haven't really thought about that. I do kind of like that comparison a little bit. Although, I think it's less of an issue for Michigan State than it is for Texas A&M, because while Miles Bridges might be better at the four, he's still pretty damn good at the three.
Yeah, well,
whereas
for sure,
with Texas A&M, one of those three guys is going to have to sit on the bench.
Yeah, no, that's true.
And maybe even, like, you can go as far as saying, like, DJ Hogue's best position might be as a four in college. So
yeah,
maybe that
fits 6'9"?
Too. Yeah, so I'm seeing how that'll play out will be interesting. But I do think it's probably fair to say that's a good problem for Billy Kennedy to have. To have to say, I have to figure out how to get Robert Williams into a lineup that includes Tyler Davis, who, you know, I think you can put him in the conversation for SEC Player of the Year. Is that crazy? Am I missing anyone? Colin Sexton, right?
Him, Sexton, if Georgia stays decent, Yante Maton.
Yeah, so, I mean, Tyler Davis was my pick in the preseason. Texas A&M was my pick to win that conference in the preseason, so I'm just bragging a little bit. I don't know.
That looks really good now. Yeah.
Yeah. I forget where I was going with that, but I don't know. Let's move on.
Well, I'll let you get out of here. So we're about at the hour mark. We're both on the 3-on-3 committee to select seniors for this. We're both relatively the same age. We're both in our early 30s. What would be your all-time 3-on-3 of players of our generation? College only. Who would you pick? What four?
Give me yours while I think of it.
So, I thought about this today, and I debated this, and I think I'm gonna go because this is gonna be.
College. I know who your point guard is gonna be.
Who?
Randall Childress. So you can.
No,
move
I took my heart out of it, so I didn't take Childress, but I do have Jay Williams, John Wall, Doug McDermott, and Tim Duncan.
That's good.
Because I think I have all the boxes checked.
So let me ask you this. Does it have to be how they played when they were in college?
Yes. You're taking the college version of them.
All right. I would go – I would take Shane Battier.
Yeah.
Space the floor.
That's where I was going with McDermott. I was trying to figure out who would be a good typical, like, stretch player.
I think that – I would take, and let me think. I think I would go Hansbrough at the four.
All right.
I think I would go, who would be my point guard? I don't want to go with Jay Williams because he went with Jay Williams. I'm going to go with, how about this? I'm going to go with senior year Kemba, or junior year Kemba Walker.
That's, I mean, that's not a bad pick.
Because I loved Kemba that year so
he
much.
Was so good.
And who was your shooting guard? You said John Wall.
Well, I had Wall and Williams. So well, I mean, you could play in 3-on-3. You could play either of them. You know, you could play both of them together. Is actually what I'm trying to say.
You know who I'm going to go with? I'm going to go with Jimmer. Do you know how good Jimmer would be 3-on-3?
Yeah. Right. If you can have like just a catch, especially if you have a guy like Kemba who can break a guy down off the bounce and draw someone in,
because that's and key you have Hansbrough scoring in the point right. in the post,
and he can step out to 10, 12 feet.
Yeah, well, Jimmer can step out to
no. I'm saying Hansbrough
32, 34 feet.
I'm saying UNC Hansbrough can at least step out to like 12 feet, space the floor even more.
Yeah,
I like that team. So you're going Hansbrough, Jimmer, Kemba. And Battier.
Yeah, but I reserve the right to think a little bit more about it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's a pretty good team.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm going with it. I'm riding with it.
I like that. All right. Thanks for coming on, man. If you're listening to this, make sure you go rate, review, and subscribe to Rob's podcast, College Basketball Talk on NBC Sports, which you can find in any place you listen to podcasts. Follow Rob on Twitter at Rob Doster. Read his stuff. I don't want to praise you too much, but I do read your stuff. So make sure you do that. Rate, review, subscribe to my podcast, obviously Fundamentally Sound, on every podcast site you can find. And then follow the show, Fundamentally SD, and follow me on Twitter, Barstool Reegs. Rob, have a Merry Christmas, man. Enjoy the holidays with the family.
I think you hit all the plugs that you could get in that one.
I try, man. I try.
All right, Reese. I'll talk to you, man.
See ya.